Welcome to the podcast. It's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist, the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee, and we are live from Interbike with Coach Chad Timmerman.
Hey, everybody.
With our CEO, Nate Pearson.
Hello.
And also with a special guest here with us today. He has a podcast, too. It's Rainmaker.
Hello, folks.
And Ray, you can find him from a tiny blog you may have heard of called DC Rainmaker. I'm sure most people that listen to this are very familiar with that. So we are going to talk about or answer your training questions today, talk about Ray and his training a bit too, because he always talks about the devices he uses, but we'll get into the training a bit on that side too, and we'll get straight to it. So first things first.
Yeah, Nate. History first.
Go
one,
for it.
DC Rainmaker, for those who don't know, the blog is all about, I think you're most known for really in-depth reviews of endurance products.
Yep.
Like
pretty
mostly electronics.
Yep.
Like really in depth.
Yeah. It's a little over the top maybe.
Sometimes like I start reading and I'm like halfway through, or I think I'm halfway through. I'm like, I'm only like 10% through.
Scroll down and just keep scrolling.
Yeah, in the same way when I have to edit afterwards, I'm like, oh, I gotta read all this crap again.
But like sometimes though actually I can learn more about the new Garmin on your page than on Garmin's site.
True.
Do you get that a lot?
A little bit, yeah. It's tricky sometimes too, especially when there's something wrong like on the Garmin site and then people are like, oh, you got it wrong. I'm like, no, it's rule number one. Garmin.com is always wrong. So
that's okay, funny.
The next thing, we first met Ray, I think in 2011 at Interbike, and you were just starting your blog? 2010,
yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, that had been the time I started turning more towards like product focus as opposed to just being me, I guess.
And Ray first posted about us. We were in the Ant booth and about Trainer Road, and we had so many more people that day, and we love him for it.
Yeah, you were just kind of slumming it around.
We're
like
scrappy,
in the,
yeah. We just had a laptop and a backpack, and we're trying to show people.
Nice.
Yep.
Ray cared. Ray saw the potential.
I did. It was good stuff, and it's great stuff now.
You know, one thing somebody told us recently, who to be nameless, this is an industry person, top person at a company, said that you are too powerful.
That's true.
Said that if you say something, like do something bad for a product, you can like kind of
like if you give it was more in the context of if you give a fully honest review and that product has a flaw, then that's very dangerous for that company, right?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
do you feel like that?
It can be tricky. Like you're trying to balance this. I think sometimes I'm over like cautious or over something that people will think about one little flaw and like blow it way out of proportion, which is sort of the internet, right, in general, where they,
right,
you know, you look at something and you're like, oh, that's not really a big deal. So you're always trying to like couch things. People understand that when you talk about a flaw, you talk about something that's weird with the product, maybe it's just a temporary thing and maybe it's not a big deal, but it's always tough to like balance that. On the flip side, there's also cases where companies just deserve it. Like, and it's, you've got to, every once in a while, like something will tickle me the wrong way, and then sorry.
Right. That's why we do our due diligence.
I think it's nice too that, again, you kind of like, if there are a bug, you'd be like, I report to them and they're working on it.
Yep.
And then other people just go, oh, it's lame.
Yeah.
The other thing I like about you, Ray, is you don't take money from the companies you're focusing on, because it's a little inside baseball, but there's some other places where I can give them $50,000 and I will then get a review a week later. It's very, very positive.
Yep, pay for play. It's incredibly common. I don't think people realize it. Even, you know,
incredibly
again,
common.
And there
are
different ways to disguise that as well, and to make everyone kind of feel like, to justify it, make it feel like they aren't just handing cash for a review. There are different channels. You kind of launder that money through different channels to make sure that it feels less, you know, it's real.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, one of the, like, my favorite, really only cycling YouTube type channel out there, like the biggest one there is. Like, they do awesome stuff, and I'm not gonna like name them by name, although it's not hard to figure out. that's everything is pay for play there. Like, if you look at any video you see, whether it be an unboxing video or anything you see, at the bottom you'll see sponsors, and that sponsors list, 80 pages down on the bottom, their list, who paid for that video. And people don't realize that when they're looking at a lot of the stuff out there in the cycling media today, whether it be on YouTube or it be on anything else, people are paying for that coverage. And like you said, it's a lot of money. It's not just like $500 changing hands. It's serious cash.
Yes.
Yeah.
As the PR director, I can validate this. Yes.
I know. Jonathan's like trying to get people to write about us, and then they're like, he gets another email from a sales guy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a couple days later.
Yeah, you reach out to the journalist and you get connected to the sales guy. It's
not
a tricky
all
world.
Like that, though.
This is absolutely
not
true.
Absolutely,
yep.
Not all like that.
Yep.
There's definitely, and to be honest, I would say that in many
really
cases, there's
people.
Kind of a shift toward the other direction. with a lot of people, and they're starting to recognize the fact that you can really provide true content that is good and entertaining and valuable to a reader, and you don't have to go through this whole process of trying to make sure cast changes hands and does that rising tide kind of floats all ships. There are a lot of great people in it, so yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, I think there's, and I think our publications are starting to realize that when they look and they say, you know, if we do more depth, then we can get more attention. And it's not just, you know, spinning up PR stuff anymore. It's, and I mean, that's, like, if I was to say that's, like, the secret behind the blog, if it's, if there's one thing, it's depth. And obviously, you know, people say, oh, duh, yeah, you make in-depth reviews. But it's trying to provide a unique angle on something that people aren't going to talk about. That's not just a PR copy and paste.
Yes.
And, you know, I can write on any topic, and as long as I have enough pictures and enough text in there, then I'll win the Google war, which is really the holy grail for any online media site, is to win the Google war.
Yep, that's exactly it. Yeah, and that's just the thing. If you find, as a media outlet, if you're just generalized, yeah, you might not have anything to hit on, but you, in-depth reviews on products that are all triathlete and cyclist focused, it makes sense, right?
So, one other thing besides this blog, the second most impressive thing about you is how many miles have you flown?
Many millions, right?
Over 3 million?
Yeah, it's probably between 3 and 4 million I can like tangibly track anyways.
Yet you're fast. Right?
That's
yeah,
amazing.
So
buying
those two, here's a secret.
You might have the highest ratio between miles to speed. What's your marathon PR?
2:54.
Yeah, so extremely fast.
And we rode together, Ray and I, in Sea Otter, at Sea Otter Classic this year, and Ray usually rides a 60 centimeter
roughly,
frame,
yeah.
And Ray was on a 52 centimeter frame.
It was like a midget bike.
And the seat post was dropping down on him. And we were climbing up around and by Laguna Seca, and steep climbs, hard stuff, and Ray just kept a comfortable conversation at like 20% pitches too. So
I then collapsed later on and died, but it was all good.
Yeah.
So what I want to know, and we get a lot of questions on the podcast about, is how do you manage all that travel and your training? Like, what do you do? What are some, how do you do the bike training first? Because that's probably what everyone cares about on this podcast.
Bike training is probably the toughest. I think, you know, for me, my general rule is I won't bring a bike with me unless I'm going to a place for about 7 days. And more importantly, a single location that I can actually ride in for about 3 days, like a weekend or something like that. So like this trip that I'm on right now, it's 2 weeks long between going to Canada for a little while and back to Interbike and then back to Canada. I'm not bringing a bike, but it's only because I've got a bike already in Canada. I've got bikes I can ride here and stuff. So I try to focus on bringing a bike where I can get the most bang for my buck out of it. Otherwise, I'm going to use hotel gym bikes, which, you know, notoriously suck. But if you've got a structured workout that you can adhere to, it's wattage-based. Hey. Yeah, there you go.
There you are.
You can do a lot with that. I mean, I've ridden every bad indoor hotel bike there is in the world, in the crappiest places there are in the world, and you can make it work. You just gotta be focused and say, I'm gonna go to the gym and I'm gonna do my 45 minutes or whatever. And I think that's the other thing, is I don't fret about when I'm traveling trying to get like a multi-hour workout in every day.
Yeah.
It's not reasonable. I'll still get like a long run in when I can, but I'm aiming for that 45 to 60 minutes is my sweet spot where I'm traveling, that I can just knock it out and be done.
If you were to take a device with you, if you're in that situation with just doing spin bikes to help your training out, what would you take, or what devices would you carry with you?
It's usually just a watch. I'm just going to carry a watch and a heart rate strap. With a watch and a heart rate strap, I can pretty much cover anything in any gym or anywhere in the world. And that way I can record my heart rate. I can do, even if like there's no power meter on that bike and the intensity lever is all wonky, I can use my heart rate zones and kind of just keep it together for a workout. And I mean, that's what you're really looking for when you're on the road, is you're not trying to like perfectly mimic your the bike fit and all that kind of stuff. You just want to get your heart rate up, and you want to keep it in certain zones at various intensities, just like you would in a power-based workout, but you're just using a different metric to do that.
Yeah, you know, I just did, I just went on a trip for 10 days, and I brought PowerTap P1 pedals, and they went on the bike. So I got power, and then I just had my phone, and it all worked, and I had a heart
rate
better.
I love my P1 pedals. I brought them with me here. I have them. I used them yesterday. Like, I'm constantly swapping them in and out of things. That is the best thing ever if you're going to rent a bike. It's not as ideal like if you're going to go to a gym and try to take apart their bike and put your pedals on there, because I promise you, the people at the hotel gyms are not like thrilled about that. They look at you.
It.
Yeah, sorry.
I did it. No one
you
even
have to sneak
gym.
It though.
Well, it's great. Yeah, if you don't have,
I don't
like,
ask.
It's actually better to have crappier gyms than nicer gyms, because nicer gyms, they have like minions minions to watch you, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you go to a crappy hotel gym that has no minion, you can get away with anything on there. Where you just go to like a fancy gym, like an Equinox or something, and like it'd be like 7 seconds on the side of that bike, and someone's there to go, excuse me, sir, stop taking apart the bike.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's
that's a good tip. So don't go to like the 24-hour fitness. Replace with a lot of employees.
No, yeah, go somewhere, go crappy.
Gym, yeah.
Yeah.
Or a hotel gym.
Yeah.
It's the way to do it.
What bike bag do you use?
What?
Bike bag?
Oh, yeah, for traveling. I use, what's it called now? So the company's changed a bunch of times, and I am completely and totally blanking out on the name of the company. Basically, it's a, I'm sure you guys can add links in the podcast, but it's a soft shell bag. It costs like two something-ish, and it goes past airline, basically baggage handling fees. So I don't pay any baggage handling fees 90% of the time, like every once in a while.
Wow, even with the 60 size frame?
Yeah. So
is that a Sycon?
No, it's something else. I know if you search like DC Rainmaker bike travel, bike bag travel, you'll find it.
I'm on it.
Yeah, you're on it right now. You'll have it before I know it. And it's called a BioSpeed Aeris case. And I think it's also known by some different names now. They rebranded it a few times. So you keep scrolling down. That's what I always use. There we go. So it's a soft shell case. And there's a lot of discussion around soft shell cases and put a bike in there. And here's the thing. Bike travel fees are so high these days. You're talking like $150, $200 to carry your bike with you. That even if I did have damage on the bike, which I have not yet had, and I've taken my bike on hundreds and hundreds of thousands of miles of travel, it's still going to be cheaper for you in the long run, or even the short run, to pay to fix whatever that minor damage is, like a broken derailleur, hanger, or something like that, than it is to pay those bike fees. But again, I just haven't had breakage issues myself. And the girl also, the same thing. It's awesome.
You're saving thousands.
Yeah.
The girl is your wife.
Yep.
And now you have, I love saying this, baby maker.
We have baby maker, yeah. We don't have like an official nickname for her yet. We keep changing
baby
it.
Baby maker.
I know.
Such a good name.
The problem is, what happens if there's another one, or what happens I didn't think through any of this stuff the first time around, like DC Rainmaker. Like, I didn't think that that name, when I first started the blog, I probably would have named it something different now that I don't live in DC anymore. I probably would have thought through the girl differently if I knew that eventually we'd get married and have a kid. So I figured, like, calling
it's poor
it.
Planning, Ray.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Go through like a naming marketing exercise.
We both became dads at about the same time.
Yeah, within like a very short window, yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Is it hard?
It's fun. I know it's not as hard as I think some people make it out to be. It's not as easy as some people make it out to be. It's just we're learning as we go along. To be fair, like in a lot of ways, we're at the easy stage of the whole parenting thing. Like the baby can't go anywhere by itself at all right now. It's only 2.5 months, so it's not like running or crawling or doing anything that, like, you can't even roll yet, so
it's contained
like it's a self-contained situation. And even when the situation is really bad, it's still self-contained and it's not going anywhere.
Exactly.
So it's fun. It's at the point where she's already on her third transatlantic flight. She's taken like seven flights so far. She loves traveling. We're just making it work.
Wow. That's awesome. I after this podcast, I don't want to bore all of you. I need to ask baby travel tips too. So let's get into the coaching questions that people have.
Yeah.
Let's get those answered for you guys. Let's kick off with Jason's question. He says, love the product and podcast. Given that you are a power-based training company and have plans for triathlons, do you have thoughts of recommendations regarding power meters designed for running? Thanks.
Ray, why don't you talk about power meters for running?
Yeah.
Is there one?
There's
a real one.
Two, I think, today. Maybe there's three. There's two right now. So there's Stribe and there's RPM. So RPM is a insole-based power meter that's both for cycling and running. They were basically a medical device company that's sort of twisted that into being a fitness company. I think they're here as well, actually. And I have not tried it in person yet. It was a whole big, long, funny discussion around that and them sending me the size and all this kind of stuff. So I don't have the unit myself because it's based on your foot size. So you can't resell it afterwards. It cut to exactly your foot. So it's a little bit kind of weird there.
Mm. Is it also cut to the shape of the shoe as well?
Mostly if your shoe is like a wide versus skinny or something, that could be a factor. But otherwise, it's each foot is measured separately and you buy just, it's a little odd.
Cool.
But it's there. The other one is Stride. Stride's much more popular. It's spelled S-T-R-Y, or S-T. There's a Y there, not an
yeah,
I.
Yeah,
S-T-R-Y. So, yeah.
Yep.
And they have been out in the market about a year now. I think they started as a Kickstarter campaign. And basically, they right now have a heart rate strap version, but they're also selling a foot pod version as well. And it outputs power. It's cool, but there's a lot of little technical caveats there. So for example, it doesn't take into account wind right now. So if you're into headwind, it doesn't really know that. Whereas, if you're cycling into a headwind, that's a pretty big deal, and that can dramatically impact power. Yeah.
Well, it's not measuring power, right? It has an accelerometer.
Correct.
And it's
so
trying
it's not
to
measuring
estimate.
Force directly. Yeah, it's not
right.
measuring force
There's no
in any
strain
way.
Gauge in there. It's purely measuring things. And to be fair, it's really good in a lot of scenarios. Like, it's actually better than most people would think. But to me, these caveats make it kind of tough, where you sit there and go, well, like for me, I ran a marathon, I don't know, 2 summers ago that was in France. It's a basically run along the coast to a big famous castle, and it's a point-to-point marathon, 26 miles obviously, but it's across the flatlands and basically along the ocean, and so it's 26 miles of dead headwind, and that day I had 26 miles of a very stiff headwind. So, all the winds aren't a big deal. In this case, it was a big deal. That was the primary factor for pacing that day, and so it's kind of tough to forget about that.
Two, just where my foot strikes, like if I'm a heel striker versus 4 foot striker, I want to know, if I'm heel striking, is that stealing some watts? Am I slowing myself down? Something like Stride might not.
The new one does have some efficiency metrics, right?
It does have efficiency, and.
Yeah, but how does it know?
Well, it
maybe
just,
like time on the ground, but then how does it know where on the foot I'm hitting?
Well, I don't know that it does. It has forward movement and upward movement, and then with this new one now they have lateral movement, and I think they use that lateral movement to kind of gauge the efficiencies based on that.
They're trying to get to it, but they don't measure force exactly. They'd measure it across
RPM's
the sole.
Interesting. The other problem I have is that I don't know if this is our RPM is an insole and it works. How do I compare it to know that it works? You know what I mean?
Because
we see so many power meters that don't work, right?
Yeah.
Right? Especially when they first
come
out.
On the cycling side of things, yeah.
It's really tricky. So they, Stride, to the credit, has done a lot of good stuff around measuring that against force plate treadmills that some universities have. And they can show it works inside really well, and it's very, very accurate there. But again, all the concerns that I have are actually outdoors, and terrain differences. You're running on a beach versus running on concrete, wind versus non-wind, stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, running power meters are definitely the future. Anyone who says they're not is kidding themselves, just like people in the 80s said cycling power meters are silly.
Yeah, agreed.
Give me a break. It's going to be here sooner rather than later, especially because technology is so much cheaper than it was in the 80s, right, or 90s or early 2000s. Now you're looking at a case where you can get these running power meters, the cost of goods is like $12, right, if that. And obviously there's sale prices in the 100 or whatever price point, but that'll plummet as soon as there's more competitors in the market.
Every Nike running shoe should have it.
Yeah, and Nike and big brands like that, I know Adidas and I think Nike too, they've bought startups that are working on power meters. So
Adidas and Under Armour.
Eventually it's on the way.
It's definitely on the way.
Yeah. So Jason, it's on your way soon. I think we're all looking forward to that too. That'll be, if you look at the running side of actual structured training, there's so much left on the table compared to something like cycling.
The other thing I want to know, you talk about running on the beach, that's, you could think of that as rolling resistance in cycling, is what kind of shoe? So are a more cushioned shoe versus a racing flat, is that going to be 5 or 10 watts?
Yep.
And we don't know that right now, but over a marathon, that's probably going to be enough to make a difference. Maybe in a Boston qualifying, your case, New York qualifying.
Yeah, no, time. I think that's right. I think that's an area. There's so much that we can learn from this. Just like cycling has learned so much from power. And I think we at this table have forgotten about all the things that power meters have normalized in our lives from a competitive advantage standpoint. We're just so mentally used to them now versus if you were to rewind 10 years ago and ask people how do you measure that or benchmark that? They'd be like, well, speed and cadence, of course. And you're like, that's not the way it works.
Staying in the big gear.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
big
how
ring,
I get faster.
Big ring intervals.
Big gear.
Yeah. It's just crazy. The whole running world is about to get revolutionized with this. It's going to change it a lot more. And so many people don't even know it's coming, but your running training is going to completely be revolutionized. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty cool stuff. Let's get into Chris's question. He says, hey guys, I'm about to start an extended period of working away from home and traveling on a weekly basis, and I should hopefully be able to set up an apartment and trainer in my work location. I'm going to take a bike with a Pioneer left side power meter, which I will leave in the work apartment, and I have a bike at home with a Power 2 Max, which I will use on the weekend. I haven't set up the Power 2 Max until now, but I'm expecting to see a difference in the measured power between the two meters. How should I adjust my FTP when training with the two different meters? And let's just get into this really quick. Ray, have you noticed between, and I don't know if you can remember on those specific power meters, but a difference in power measurement between the two?
You may see them. I mean, from an accuracy standpoint, I have put left-only power meters with the Power 2 Max and vice versa. And, you know, if the world is perfect, you would see them be perfect, but people are different. And so the challenge with left-right, kind of what he's getting into there, is the fact that left-only power meters, whether it be stages or left-only Pioneer, Pioneer makes both left-only as well as left-right, so they're kind of unique there, is that it's doubling your left leg. So if you have an imbalance, and almost every human has an imbalance between left and right.
Which isn't something you need to worry about correcting either.
No, don't try to connect it. It doesn't work. In fact, it actually hurts your power balance when you try to correct it. But more importantly, it's different, of course, over the course of a ride. So, you know, you can't simply say I'm 53 left, 47% right all the time. Like for me, I'm balanced for a while, for the most part, within like 1 or 2%. But then as I fatigue one leg higher than the other. Some people are opposite. Some people, like me, I'm pretty balanced up to my FTP. When I hit my FTP, I become incredibly imbalanced above that. And everyone is different. Like I ask different people in the industry, and they're like, oh yeah, I'm up to this point. Maybe it's 80% of FTP. And it's so that becomes a challenge if you're trying to compare between different power meters. And like when I'm training, I always upload the same power meter to my training log. That way it stays consistent across the board. But for fun, what I'll do is I'll actually upload all the units at once, and I'll let my coach look at them and try to figure out which unit is which. It's useful for him because he can start to see trends over time and see which ones, how they report and stuff, and how like different levels. It's just kind of like it's an interesting exercise, but I'll then clean them up after the fact in the log. I'll go into Training Peaks and remove all the duplicates and stuff. But yeah, it's definitely, it'd be like to the core of his question. Honestly, there's little he can do about it, because even if he were to put them both on the same bike and figure out his power balance left and right, there isn't a way to correct that. Like, there isn't a way to say, on my Garmin, adjust this plus 2% or whatever. Garmin has what's called a setting on your Garmin that does like a ratio adjustment, and people misunderstand that and think that's for adjusting left-right balance. In reality, it's actually for adjusting differences in your left and right leg. So if you have one crank arm length is higher than the other. So there isn't any easy way today to tweak that.
Interesting. Now, Chad, you've used a Power 2 Max before, right? I've never trained with one.
Yeah, anytime I can compare all of my power meters from an SRM to now with stages. They've entered my particular mix. Power 2 Max, all of them.
PowerTap, P1s.
Yeah. Really everything. And I there's just never a big enough discrepancy for me to concern myself with it. They're always close enough for me to work with.
Yeah, we've done tests where just like Ray, with a bunch of power meters on one bike. Chad just did one with a Power 2 Max,
several.
P1, PowerTap, Virtual Power, InRide. And it was good.
Yeah.
I have two quirks on my, two quirks on bikes, an SRM, and a stages on the cross bike.
Yeah.
And I put them on, and for me, I'm 50-50 all the way up and down. But whatever it is, I'm constant.
I understand.
We get it, Nate.
I would say the most important thing between those two is to do a zero offset at the beginning of your ride, and then like 10 minutes in. And as a habit that I've learned in testing so many power meters, I always do my zero offset twice. And it's sort of like this little secret I've got. And the reason is that every once in a while, like every once a month, and keeping in mind, this is times every ride has 4 to 5 power meters on it. So once a month times 4 to 5 power meters means like hundreds of data points that I'm working with. I'll see a zero offset that just that one time will be weird and out of set for a given power meter. And of course,
I just got one the other day on my Garmin the other day. Random, like the offset number was extremely strange.
Yep.
And then I just did it again, and it came back normal again.
Yep.
And the power was way high with that first one. So
exactly. I always do it twice, and I always make sure that the numbers match. And I'll keep doing it until the numbers match two times in a row.
So like in quick succession, do it, and then a couple seconds later,
and then do it again. Okay. And just sometimes what I'll do, depending on the type power meter, is I'll do it once, and I'll rotate the crank one revolution around, and then do it again, just to validate that it's nothing funky there. But that's like my... It just comes from having like that bad test where you're like, I just wasted that entire ride because that data was bad.
Well, one thing that is on our product roadmap is to record all those offsets and then flag it. So if you get a big one, be like, boom, hey, this is way off.
I'd love to see more folks doing that. I know Stages just announced doing that with the new Stages Dash head unit that feeds into the Today's Plan site. They already do it on their site. That's a third-party platform. So I'd love to see trainer companies do it as well. And I think it makes so much sense because from a coaching standpoint, like my coach has a bunch of different people that he's coaching. Some of them are highly technical and some of them are highly untechnical. Yeah. And so to be able to quickly look at that and go, oh no, you did not have an awesome day. Your power meter was not calibrated correctly.
We plan on having it like, so post-ride, to be able to like turn it on and be like, okay, here were the calibration points on your ride to see where it is. So you can look back at a PR too, same power meter. You look at a PR a couple weeks ago and you're like, whoa, that was -700 when normally I get an offset of 200.
Yeah. Right.
So you know it's like that's...
Yeah, that's what Stage is doing. They basically graph it on this graph, and you can see your offset and see if it's going. And then they're even doing something further where they'll give an alert if your offset is out of band of normalcy for your power meter.
Yeah.
So, like, if your Stage is thing.
Yeah, great idea.
Yeah.
Great minds think alike. Yeah. Yeah. So another question that Chris has is he's asking how he can actually measure the difference between the two power meters. So do you have anything that you do, Ray, like a specific interval format or a specific workout or anything else where you gather data to test between the two different meters?
I do. So if you have them both on the same time, and this is one of those like sad panda answers where if you are not putting both power meters on the bike at the exact same time, riding at the exact same moment, then the data is useless, which I know sounds harsh, but that's the reality of science.
Totally
so you can't compare two power meters from two different sessions. It just doesn't work. Once I do have them on the same time, then there's different tests. I've started to kind of actually standardize on some different tests a little bit. In fact, one I'm using Trainer Road to control for 30-30 intervals.
Good man.
So it's it's working out great. It's something that's, and it's actually funny because I even made an error in the workout creator when I was doing this workout of 30-30s where there's like a 1 second blip at 500 watts. And it was one of those things where I just dragged the wrong thing or whatever, and it's there. And I didn't delete it the first time and I like forgot about it. And then the second time I didn't delete it. And now I've realized it's actually a really cool little test because what it's doing is it's testing whether or not the power meter reacts that 1 second blip or something is artificially smooth.
Yes.
So I'm actually going to leave it in there.
Yeah, because that does happen. Yeah, that does happen.
Well, that's where it triggered. So Wahoo, with their trainer, this is how this whole conversation came up, is basically it missed that blip. And I'm like, huh. And it missed a lot of little blips there on the new kicker. They've since, they're going to commit to changing the way they read out power in erg mode, which impacts you guys as Trainer Road more than anything else. And so it was one of those things where, I do tests. I basically kind of have three tests that I sort of standardize on indoor stuff anyways. Is one, I'll do Zwift for a while. And the reason why I use Zwift for one of the tests is because it's called a Swiffer. It's a thing you move around the kitchen and clean up. The reason why I use Trainer Road for one test and Zwift for another. But I use Zwift because it's basically capturing how a power meter or trainer responds to instantaneous body changes that erg mode won't necessarily capture. Because here's a hill, here's a sprint, here's that kind of stuff. Erg mode just flattens that, right? Erg mode says, I don't care what you're doing, I'm doing this. Versus the 30-30 test that I do is great because erg mode and trainer road is controlling it, and then it's simply going, 150 watts, 500 watts, or 550 watts, back and forth within 30 seconds. So that allows me to see how fast does it react? Does it quickly stabilize? There's lots of cool stuff you can do there. So those are kind of the two basic indoor ones, and I got a whole crap ton of outdoor ones.
Well, we've done two to test multiple power meters is kind of like a modified ramp. So we'll go up like 10 watts a time and then have like a little bit of rest in between. And because what you'll see, to get technical, is power meters will have different slopes, and that's when you'll run into problems where they might be together at 100 watts, but when you get to 300 watts, there'll be a 10 watt difference, and at 600 watts, there'll be a 30 watt difference.
Yep. Absolutely.
And then that's when it's very annoying then.
Yeah, ramp tests are great. I've got one that I use there. Also, if you really want to have more fun, is cadence tests. So cadences, especially on trainers, can be a really finicky and fun thing where, you know, a trainer will be fine at like 90 RPMs, but it'll have trouble at 50 RPMs. Or on the high end, on power meters, at 150 RPM or 170 RPM, you really want to push it. That's where things fall apart. So like one of the tests I always do is on power meters especially, at the low end. So how low can it go? Which is a fun test, by the way, if you're really bored someday. See how slow you can pedal. Like, legitimately, see how slow you can. You get it down to 18 RPM. Like, you think about that. That's 3 seconds per revolution. It's really hard to do.
Yeah.
You'll be like, oh, I'm at 50 RPM.
And what happens when you hit those really high RPMs? You see too high power or too low?
You'll see basically accelerometers kind of problems. So a lot of power meters can easily do 130, 140, 150. 160, 170 is where they start to put error correction in there, and they basically say, no, that's like a bump in the road. I'm gonna forget that. Most people aren't doing 170.
That's also a small moment in track racing, right? That's another thing that I think that people just assume it's always high cadence. That's a rare moment in it. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Let's go into Sai's question. He says, hey guys, I've been an avid listener to you all for many months, and that alone has led me to training better and becoming a faster cyclist. We're fulfilling the mission, guys. Solid stuff. So thank you. He says, but with the winter months closing in here in the UK and my A race date in mind, I will need to start the structured training plan in December. Will we have, and I like how he says we. He feels like a part of us.
Yes, will we
have an Android release by then? It seems to have been too long. And then he says 4.5 stars for now.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he doesn't give us 5.
You know, we were so excited because Ray's here. We didn't tell everyone, but by the time this podcast is out, Android will be out in the Google Play Store.
And a beta version of the Android.
Ray, you don't know this probably, but people have been asking for Android, and we're a small company, and hard to do. There's actually
you have a comments section. You have heard.
I've heard Android users are, what should we say, vocal. I think they're very vocal.
But we have 2 Android devices in front of us. I think as a company, we own like 28 different Android devices. This release is going to be, it doesn't have training plans in it, but that'll come soon. It's going to be a beta, and it's really cool. It works with Ant built into Samsung phones, has Bluetooth smart support. But the thing is that we looked up, and there's like 9,000 devices that we support of different variations.
So many devices.
Yeah, and we haven't tested them all, but we do use this product where we actually run our product in this place in like Denmark, and has a whole bunch of phones, and we ran them on a bunch of them, and like did automated tests to like walk through stuff for quality. But still, as it goes out, if you have any problems, please email us at support@trainero.com so we can fix it right away. Just because with iPhone, it's so easy.
And most
test each iPhone on like iOS 8, 9, 9, now 10, and you.
And okay. Most Android devices on Android 5.0, right?
We do Lollipop 5.0 and above. 5.0.
Yeah, and most devices on that are going to deliver a great experience.
Yeah, so you can use Geekbench. You ever used Geekbench before?
No.
Ray?
Huh.
Geekbench is a program or is an app or program that says how fast your phone is. There's Geekbench 4. If most of the modern phones are like you get a single core score of 1,000 or above, we got a Tab A, and that is a Samsung tablet. It's like $89. That has a Geekbench score of 400,
which is slow.
It's slow. It's very slow for that, but it still works. It's not like perfectly butter smooth, but you can still totally do a workout.
Once
you get in the workout, it's great, which is kind of cool. Is you can get like an inexpensive tablet, maybe you can use for your kids too, and then with Bluetooth Smart and Ant with no dongles.
Pretty
awesome. So what you're telling me is I can download this app and then show the girl that my phone is too slow, I need a brand new phone.
Yes.
Yeah, I can actually give you a special version with bugs.
That'd be perfect. That's what I need.
Low memory warning.
Yeah.
It just dies.
And just so that you know too, something cool about this, if you don't have a Samsung phone with native Ant Plus just wirelessly supporting that, you can use a dongle, an adapter, then you just use the same USB dongle that you use for your computer on Ant Plus. You can use it then, right, and just plug it into your phone. You just have to have a little adapter.
That's sweet.
So that's pretty cool,
too. Very nice.
Yeah. So that's a handy tool
Bluetooth
that people can use.
Bluetooth is also cool, too. Selfie. Ray just took selfie. Cool. So yeah. Hey, it's out.
It's out.
Yeah, I guess we'll just
beta,
not release this until this podcast, but we're planning on tomorrow morning. We're filming this or recording this on a Wednesday. So,
yep. Absolutely. So let's just do one more question because Ray has to get out of here for a meeting. Let's go into Chris's question, another Chris. He says, for an untrained athlete or one coming from an anaerobic powers sport, and he says pool, swimming, weightlifting, etc., could a 20-minute FTP overestimate 60-minute power using the 95 adjustment or 0.95 adjustment? When he says 0.95 adjustment, he's talking about we take the power that you put out during that time, we reduce it by 0.5%, right? He says, wouldn't a trained endurance athlete have a shallower drop-off or different power curve? What do you say, Chad?
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to relate to whether you're trained or untrained, but if you're coming from an anaerobic sport and you have maybe a greater anaerobic contribution, that could skew things a little bit. Over the course of a 20-minute effort, though, not enough for us to worry about it, especially considering we kick off the 20-minute FTP test with a 5-minute clearing effort. That's going to reduce some of that anaerobic contribution a bit. So if it does influence it, it doesn't really matter because your FTP is still what your FTP is. But it is something you can train over time. So if you're coming from an anaerobic background, you're moving into a more aerobic endurance event or type of sport, you can gradually shift that. How much you can shift it, it depends on a lot of things. There are genetic factors that you really don't have, you can't do much about, but a lot of it is training based. So you start training aerobically, working as an endurance athlete, and you'll see a gradual shift. But I don't think the difference in your FTP test coming from that background is going to be anything for you to concern yourself with.
At Trainer Road, we had one bro who worked for us who was playing at the gym.
He
benched like 350 pounds.
He's been like genetically built to bench press and nothing else.
Yeah. And he was just going to
like Mr. Incredible.
Tell all of us that, oh, I'm going to get a 300-watt FTP because I'm so strong in my legs and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's going against, there's guys in the company who are like 130 pounds who have a 330 FTP.
Yeah.
So, and this guy's over 200 pounds. So he went on and
these little
it.
Guys are beating him in raw watts. It's not even strength to weight.
So, corrected. He did the test, and the first, like, minute of the test, right, was all anaerobic. He went way hard, and then it just, kaboom,
exploded.
Died.
Exploded.
Right away. Exploded. And his FTP was, like, 150 or something.
You know what's interesting that Chris brings up here, and I think that this is admirable? Chris is looking to find the test that gives him the most accurate results. I know a lot of us tend to use the testing format that gives us the most rosy results, the most positive, and is easier for us, I guess. And a lot of people that come in from like an anaerobic background, whatever the type of activity they did, they'll lean more toward the 8-minute test because it feels more in their wheelhouse.
Sure.
But that's kind of cool, Chris, that you're looking to make sure that you get an honest assessment rather than one that perhaps, you know, lends more towards your strengths and turns a blind eye to the weaknesses a bit.
And Chad, we kind of like it too with what kind of racing you're doing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I try to pair them. I mean, it's not essential. If you like one format over the other, it doesn't matter what your event is. But, you know, for consistency, obviously we're going to stick with the same one. But, you know, if you're going to do shorter events, a shorter test format definitely lends more to your process.
I've got like 2 minutes left with Ray, but how do you test your FTP? Or do you self-adjust? Do you take a test?
I don't tend to do tests as much anymore. I use most software applications now can basically give me kind of that point in time FTP guesstimate. And I find that's pretty darn close. I think it's, you know, within the ballpark of what I'm looking for and what I want to test with. And for me, even going back to, you know, training plans and stuff like that, that works pretty well. And I think, honestly, part of the challenge with testing is that it can, depending on how it's done, take quite a bit out of your regular schedule. Like, it potentially interrupts things quite a bit just for the sake of a test. And I think software's advanced now so much to the fact that, or so much to the point where you're getting a good enough number that, you know, unless you're like going out for a national team or something like that, if something can give you an auto-calculated number, I don't see a reason to, quote, waste a training day, which is what you're doing. I mean, in a lot of cases, unless you can build that in perfectly, you're wasting a training day or two, depending on how much that takes out of you, just to get a test to tell you what to do next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'd argue that Dr. Coggins says all the time that testing is training.
Training is testing.
Training is testing, yeah. He always says that, because you do get a really good...
Yeah.
workout, and you got to build in the right warm up and stuff, but you basically get 20 minutes.
It's funny how you can really estimate, like, when you're training and you're going through a build phase or something else and it's going up, riders that like are really good at that or have some experience doing it, you kind of know, like, I feel like I'm at about 309 watts right now. That's probably where my FTP
is.
It's amazing how close you can get to what that is.
The seven deadly sins of cycling, if you Google that, there's the way of to estimate your FTP, and one of them is repeated intervals in training. It's like Ray, if he doesn't want to do a test, he say, okay, I'm doing my 15-minute intervals, and now they're really easy, and he bumps it up 10 watts, and that gets close. Like,
yep.
Yeah,
and
do, then do a 2x20
from a really hard ride.
Yep.
Just stuff that he's done in training.
And that's what I mean. My coach has done the same thing for years. It's just simply having these same workout sets week after week, month after month, literally year after year, and you can start to see those improvements even if you're not using fancy software to stuff. Yeah. You sit there and go, it's like you said, it's I've increased this 10 watts, you know, every 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever it is that your increment is, and or my heart rate has gone down for the same wattage. I mean, you don't have to overthink some of the technology stuff. You can use kind of the basics of something has to give, whether that's, you know, you increase power or you decrease intensity or heart rate or perceived effort, or as long as something is changing there, then you're on the right track.
Yep. Awesome. Thanks for joining us, Ray. Thanks for sending in your questions, everybody. You can do so at trainerroad.com/podcast. Use the hashtag AskTrainerRoad or find us on Snapchat. You can just search for Trainer Road and we'll pop up there, and you can send in your questions there as well. We've answered a bunch of them today. We'll continue answering them. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye. Thanks, all.